Hey, everybody, and welcome to Season 2 of Let's Get Digital. We are so excited to bring you a full slate of shows exclusively about using social media to grow your business in 2020. That's what they're all about. The first episode was recorded in February and is all about social video. I am really excited to get your ears on this. There is a lot of awesome stuff, but just a quick note, the first 3 minutes are a little shaky. We're testing a new live stream approach, and I promise we'll do it better. Thanks in advance. Our next episode is March 18th in Iowa City, and it's all about influencer marketing and audience growth. You're not going to want to miss this, but okay, enjoy the show. All right, we're live. Well, welcome back to another Let's Get Digital, our monthly marketing event series for serious modern digital marketers. We started this program about a year ago as a way to bring local marketing professionals together. And this year we thought, well, why not bring it live to you wherever you are so you don't have to leave and also make our lives a little bit easier. And this year our topics are all about social media marketing strategy and how to grow your business using different tactics that are working now. And we wanted to kick it off this year, hey Blue, with a series on social video specifically, because we all know that video performs well in social media platforms. The real question comes to what type of formats are on your radar, and for the people actually creating that content or managing video programs, what would you recommend an audience do if they want to take a step in the right direction? So we have two guests with us today that are at the top of the game when it comes to social video. And so I'm really excited to hear your perspective. So why don't we kick off by just introducing yourself and explain maybe what your role is at a high level. And then I have one sort of fun question, which I want you to ask to really get help the audience get to know who you are. So what is a guilty pleasure Instagram or YouTube account, like something you watch that's just for fun that you think is easily defined as a guilty pleasure, something that just feels good but maybe is not something people would expect about you? So Bruce, why don't you kick it off?
Yeah, my name is Bruce Heinz. I work in the University of Iowa's Office of Strategic Communication as a social media coordinator, and I work on a team of three that we all do social media full time. Specifically in my role, I kind of help create and curate content for our unpaid social media. And a lot of that is, you know, played out on Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat, and Instagram. Stories is where I spend a lot of my time. Cool. And then LinkedIn as well. And then a guilty pleasure. So I love Trey Kennedy. I don't know if you guys have ever heard of him. He's kind of like an internet sensation. Mm-hmm. And what I love about him is he does these sketches that really poke fun of things that we say and do in like everyday life, whether it be kind of poking fun at millennials or trying to find your way as an adult or life in the office. And his skits are comical. And he's coming to Iowa City in March. Cool. For his stand-up tour, so I'm excited to see him.
My name is Logan Bean. I'm a production assistant for the football team here at Iowa. I'm a junior. And my main role is to basically create content for our social medias, Instagram, Twitter, whether it's practice, games, as well as for the video board on game days. We try to produce as much content as possible, video related, for the video board and social media. And then as well, I do freelance video work for businesses, like you said, Estella's. Recently started working with a program down in Florida for football. So basically just anything I can get my hands on as video related. I'm always trying to get more jobs. And my guilty pleasure, definitely find myself scrolling through Barstool Sports a lot.
Okay.
So probably not the greatest content, but definitely find myself.
They're doing something really well.
It's different. Yeah. It's different.
Something's working with them.
Yeah. Both the fact that they localize content for every region, every school, as well as, you know, just keep people's attention. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there is something to be learned about their social media game.
For definitely.
Yeah. That's awesome. I love that you do both the video board and social, like about the most opposite device sizes that you can
definitely
imagine.
It's
probably like very similar principles in terms of keeping people's attention, trying to get people to engage in a certain way, to react in a certain way. And I wanted to kick it off by just talking about trends. Like, we want to make this as tactical and as specific as possible for people. So what are the things that you're observing as social video strategists in your roles, whether you're creating content for people and trying to find the best ways to get someone to stop scrolling and pay attention, or you're designing an overall campaign for the month that is going to accomplish something. So what are some things you're seeing that are working right now, let's say, that it's a trend?
So like you said, the main objective is to get people to stop scrolling, which is very difficult in today's society because people's focus time just isn't as long as it used to be. So I found myself trying to create short content that people can engage with, connect with right away, whether it's 10 to 15 seconds, 30, or even up to a minute long like Instagram allows. Just trying to get to the point right away, whether it's to hype them up, entertain them. I think that's just the main objective, is to just get them to stop scrolling and get the message across right away.
Yeah, I think to add on to that, I mean, you hit it right on the nail. I mean, people's attention spans are kind of dwindling, and it's hard to keep our attention for long periods of time. So yeah, we have to shorten the length of our videos. And I think when I first started in my role, you know, we were doing videos that were 90 seconds, and then we dropped it down to 60 seconds, and then to 30 seconds. And now we're finding that videos that are like 15 to 30 seconds, you know, that's a sweet spot. Yeah.
Not to say that longer videos aren't still valuable.
Are they valuable, like making longer ones?
Yeah.
I mean, I definitely think for certain situations, I mean, like Twitter still allows, I think, 2 minutes and 20 seconds. Facebook, obviously, you can still put YouTube. I've noticed LinkedIn is actually becoming very important in the video, like content world right now. It's growing a lot. So, I mean, I think it's valuable. You just have to know when and where, like, is the time where if you want to use a longer video or a shorter form video.
Yeah, longer content, it is valuable. And it's not that all the longer content performs poorly, because some of it does really, really well. Some of our best videos are longer, right? But I think YouTube is a good platform to have longer content. But, you know, when it comes to, like, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, I think we've just found that the trend is shorter is better. But yeah, that's what I would say. And I think, you know, he had mentioned that, you know, the goal is to get them to stop, right? So you have like a 3 second window right at the beginning, you know, right when the video kicks off to grab their attention. And, you know, whether that is some sort of high energy, exciting moment that really draws them in, or whether it's text that highlights some sort of significant fact, or just something cool, you know, that people can relate to, that they can identify with. I think that's really key to have, you know, that first 3 seconds has really got to draw them in.
Yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a video in mind that performed really well? The first one I want to ask is something that, you know, maybe followed all of that formula and worked really well. And then I also want to know if something was sort of, you're seeing anything that's maybe more counterintuitive work really well. So it's maybe something that defied all of those rules and yet still performed extremely well that maybe we could break down. I think it's helpful to think of examples. So what comes to mind, something that performed extremely well based on the measurements of views, engagement, et cetera?
So one video that I have in mind was this past fall we had posted, and this was about a minute long video, so a little longer than what we had suggested, right? But it was a video that highlighted the university, or not the university, but Iowa City as the number one ranked college town in America. And I think it had over, you know, 1,300 shares, and this was on Facebook that we posted it, right? And it did exceptionally well. And, you know, I think the reason it did well, one, is because it really resonated with our audience. And on Facebook, we're really trying to target, you know, alumni, parents, young alumni. We have some students on there, but mostly it's an older generation that we're trying to target. And, you know, throughout the video, it showed glimpses of downtown Iowa City and events at a, you know, sporting events and stuff that's happening in the community. And one thing that I think our audience could resonate with is, you know, oh, I went to the University of Iowa. I remember those times. It kind of brings this nostalgic feeling, you know, to them. And I think that's why it performed so well, is it just resonated. It resonated with the audience. And then you talk about you know, something that's counterintuitive. I feel like they're, with video, sometimes we get into this habit of like, okay, it has to be perfectly polished. It has to be, you know, high quality, clear, and it just has to look perfect. But what I've found specifically is that with like live events, I think sometimes it's okay to, you know, shoot something with your phone. It doesn't have to be a fancy camera. It could just be a high energy moment that's taken, you know, with your phone.
Yeah,
and those kind of moments have performed fairly well. So there's value to having both, both of those, you know, high quality and maybe a lower quality, but that's something that I've noticed.
Yeah, I want to dig into that too. The polished versus maybe you'd call it sometimes authentic, raw, or user-generated content. Like that'd be a lot of what you would define it as. And I think there is something that stops people from creating video content or in social that could perform well because there's a barrier that they, a mental barrier to how polished something needs to be to be able to publish it. But actually, maybe some of performing content is not anymore. And so that is really an interesting thing I want to dig into. The other thing that I heard that is worth repeating is the reason maybe that video performed well is that it hit upon this nostalgia. And there are certain emotional triggers that get people to share. And one of them, without a doubt, is that it relates to your identity or a memory of yours, right? And by sharing it, when you're sharing a piece of content, you are saying something either very directly or just about yourself subconsciously. And so, you know, when the institution you spent 4+ years at gets recognized, you want to be recognized for that too, right? And that's kind of what that message is saying. So by creating content that lets people present themselves well, by look good by sharing it, it's a good recipe for getting people to engage, it seems like.
Yeah. It's been a huge success for us.
So, All right, what about you, Logan?
Something counterintuitive?
Yeah, something that performed well that maybe was unexpected to you, that it performed better than you thought.
Yeah. I would say one video I had in mind, probably from last spring, we actually had a spring, so we had a spring football, like we have spring football camp, and it was supposed to just be like a short, like recap of the practice, but eventually it kind of turned into like more of like we were telling a story of the practice, and I just remember like as I was editing it, and like he said, it was really polished like for a practice video, but I just remember while editing it, I like didn't think it was going to be like something that a lot of people would be, I mean it's a practice video, I didn't see it as something a lot of people would be engaged with, but I noticed that a lot of people don't just want like this footage straight to a song. They actually want to hear the sounds. They actually want to hear like the raw, like kind of like you said, the raw.
Yeah.
Like I think we just got into a culture now where everyone wants to like see something so polished, but then when they see something that has like the sounds and sights of like the actual being there, that I mean, it can change someone's whole perspective while watching that video and really capture their attention.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I know what you mean. I think it's cool because your video, you know, it didn't go the way you wanted it to. You maybe had like changed the plan, you had to pivot a little bit, but it still turned out really well. And I like that. I see that there has to be like this balance between polished and then like the raw user generated, and both have value. You know, our office has an incredible video team that can create those polished videos for us. They do a great job, but yeah, like I think capturing the raw, the sights and the sounds of the practice, I think that's huge. And yeah, I think that's solid work.
It can be really hard to find that balance as well. I think there's been like a standard where I've heard a lot of people say like, oh, this isn't as good, I'll just put it on my story instead of my feed or something like that.
Yeah, and I've heard that.
I mean, I just don't feel like that's right because I mean, your story can almost be more valuable than the feed. I mean, I know people who just go on Instagram and look through the stories and it not even through their feed anymore. And if they're doing that, you're going to want your best content on your story or at least direct them to your page, through the share feature or whatever it is. So I think you just have to know when and where to use that raw content.
Yeah.
So then what are some of your tips on stories? Because, you know, we've stories as a Snapchat feature has been around for 5+ years, as an Instagram feature, you know, 3 years or so. But clearly user behavior has changed significantly where people might only or primarily use stories. And if you were to ask Facebook or look at some of how they've talked about the future of their platform. They really believe most things will be stories. Forget what platform, YouTube has stories now.
Yeah, and, they do.
I think Google My Business just released a stories function, and I don't know what's next, but the storyification.
LinkedIn stories.
150%, like right here, I'll put it in the ground that LinkedIn will have stories within the next 12 to 18 months, easily.
Heard it here first.
So what are your tips for that format, the vertical story format, to get someone to, if they're going to go ahead and be, you know, one of the tips you said was that some content that you would otherwise have been created for feed, or that you thinking of it as a as a channel that's less interesting or less engaging is not maybe the best way to perform there. So what else would you recommend?
Yeah, so when I generally put content on my story, my overall thought, I mean, not for every piece of content, but my overall thought process is to bring them to my page, because they're gonna see, I mean, right when they tap the screen, they're gonna see it right away. It plays, it's, or unless if it's not a video, but video content plays right away, they're gonna see it, and within the first 3 seconds, they're gonna either click your name or either keep watching or something like that. So I think Instagram stories, or any stories on any platform, is just, it's really important to have a goal and where you wanna direct them to, I think. I think the Instagram has like the swipe up feature too, where you can go to a link or, so I think that's mainly what I would use stories for. Maybe the feed's more for showcasing content, whereas the feed is, or the stories are more for directing your consumers one way or the other.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's really good. I think on our end, you know, working at an institution, we got to think, all right, what do these students care to watch on these stories? And we found that, you know, whenever we can show them what life looks like at Iowa, as opposed to simply just telling them, that makes the biggest difference. So anytime that we can showcase student life, we can showcase excitement, different organizations or resources on campus, that usually works really well. And then we've already mentioned this before, but brevity is super important. And if you are someone who wants to send your audience to a page, to you know, give them a link, I mean, it's got to be, you know, close to, you can't have 7 or 8, 9 posts, I don't think, in an Instagram story with a link at the end. I think it's got to be more like 4 or 5.
Okay. So is that one of your recommendations, is if you want to use stories as a way to drive an external call to action versus going to see a post, which is one of the ways that you're using it organically, is you'd say, you know, tell a story in 4 to 5 tiles and then drive them to the call to action.
Yeah, I think that works for us specifically. Okay. That's what our data has shown. It might be different for other brands or other industries even, but yeah, for us definitely, you want to try to get their attention quickly and find a way to tell a story, a meaningful story, in 4 or 5 posts. It's challenging, but if you can do it, then you'll find some success, I think.
One thing I forgot to mention as well, a lot of people use stories. I mean, obviously we know they're only up for 24 hours. So it can, a lot of the content that you put on your story is stuff like content that you need these people to see right now. Whereas the feed, it's going to be up there for a while. I mean, sometimes I'm running into posts on my feed that might be, say, 2 days ago now with the whole Instagram algorithm thing. Whereas stories, it's right up there. People are going to scroll through them and they're going to be like, oh, that event's tonight. Or So it's really good for promoting stuff that's like now, because it is only going to be up there for 24 hours. It's not going to be there forever. I mean, I think that's important to remember as well.
Yeah, the timeliness component, you know, stories is in the moment as much as possible, or like that seems to perform well. And then your feed, I think it can be overwhelming for people, but it's a truly important strategy just to think about how your feed is one part an audience that's seeing it in the next 2 or 3 days.
Yeah.
And also a grid that you might come back to, you know, weeks, you might discover weeks later. That is a very unique feature of Instagram that I think hasn't been replicated in other places. How often do you scroll through a timeline on a Facebook page? You almost never do. You definitely don't do it on Twitter. You don't go back that far. But on Instagram, it really presents itself as, you know, telling a story through a grid of content that I think is notable and different in that it needs to a little bit be more evergreen, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
So what about, when we originally made this topic, we wanted to talk about TikTok, because TikTok is one of those platforms that is even more polarizing, I found, than Twitter, where you like you get it and you're entertained by it and you're a power user, or you can't stand it, you don't understand why people would spend so much time doing it, and you have no desire or strategy there. And then maybe a lot of marketers are kind of in the middle, like both curious and trying to plot what their strategy is going to be to test things, as well as very hesitant to do something without it all fully architected. So where do you fit in that camp, and what has been your observations about TikTok if you guys are users yourself?
Yeah, so TikTok is wildly popular. You know, I think in 2019 it was the second or third most downloaded app worldwide.
Right.
You know, so people are using it, and I'm a fan of it. I wasn't at first, but
so it grows on you.
It's grown on me a little bit. And from an institution, you know, looking at where we're at, our camp, we know that our prospective students are on it. They're using it. And we know we want to target them. And it's challenging because it's like, okay, TikTok is fun and creative, and you can really see a person's personality, I guess, on TikTok, and it's super fun. And as an institution, how do we communicate our messages in a way that is fun like that without, you know, we don't want to be all silly and all games as a brand, you know, for us at least. You know, we want to be strategic about it. So where we're at right now is we see value in it, and I think we want to get into that. We want to get into TikTok, and right now we're kind of in a testing phase, I guess you could say, where we have some students that are working for us that are currently creating videos, brainstorming, coming up with ideas of, all right, what could we post? You know, what would our audience care about, and what would they like to see? You know, how can we make it strategic and fun? And this spring is kind of just, it's all testing. You know, we're it's the guinea pig. We're trying to see if we can make it work, and right now trying to determine, do we have the bandwidth to be able to create content consistently for the platform? So that's where we're at right now. We see the value. We would love to be on it, I think, and it's fun and creative, but we're really trying to ask those questions of, okay, how can we be strategic on it as an institution? So we're getting there slowly.
You fit in that camp. Got it.
Yeah, we fit in that camp. We're getting there. Ask us in about 4 or 5 months, and we might have a better answer for you, but we're testing it right now.
Okay, what about you?
Yeah, definitely. I'm actually very similar to him. I downloaded it probably about 6 months ago, and I just didn't really see a lot of value in it right away. Yeah. But I recently just downloaded it about 2 weeks ago again, and I was very surprised at how many brands are taking advantage of it. Mm-hmm. I think it's one of the apps where a brand can really create a personality for itself. Like he kind of said, the university could. Mm-hmm. They can create content in a fun way, mm-hmm. whether it's just like funny videos or advertisements. But I think it's hard sometimes to get past all the amateur content on TikTok. There's a lot of invaluable content, but I think in the next few months you're going to see a lot of brands take advantage of the market right now because it is pretty open. And also, what's huge to know is that I think I saw about 50% of the users are like our age, like 18 to 25. Mm-hmm. So if these brands, if that's their target market, then that's huge because I mean we're all on it. So
yeah.
So the way that we've been thinking about it too is that maybe part of the answer it's not so much that a brand doesn't know if they can make it work. It's an individual thing, because the people that are really good at TikTok are individuals. Mm-hmm. You typically see brands, the early ones that were really successful, even publishers like Washington Post, are getting a lot of traction because it's an individual that has taken the leadership role of taking the account on and creating content from it as someone that's developing skits and is a person. That's why it has personality. Like, it's very personal. You have to use your people. And so it really almost takes a unique person. Like, maybe that's your fifth social media team member that you'll have to bring on is like a native TikTok user. And so maybe one of the ways people need to think about it is, if you don't get it, you can test things, but if you feel uncomfortable by the idea of being so vulnerable, playing off choreography, you know, having interactions with cultural moments that are big, you probably need a different person, in the same way that you would tell someone to hire a different community manager for their Twitter account that gets the pulse of how the internet is working. Yeah. So maybe that's part of it, is you just need someone that is have that dynamic personality. And then TikTok is really not so much about, you know, having a custom video strategy as much as a person that has that gets the platform and wants to have fun with it.
Yeah, I see what you mean there. And I think we're all creators, and I find myself sometimes thinking like, all right, I don't like change. I like things the way they are. I don't like new things. I like how we're doing things now, but we have to be forward thinking, right? And you're absolutely right. There has to be someone that can take initiative and that's creative and is willing to test the waters, mm-hmm. willing to challenge themselves a little bit. But yeah, you bring up a good point there.
So what about tools that have helped you make better social video? You're gonna come at it from different perspectives. As a video editor, you likely have, you know, are you an Adobe Suite guy? Yeah, so you have, you know, your kind of standard selection of tools for animation or editing, and that's maybe a go-to, but a lot of people creating social video today, a lot of individual content creators or people manning the social media accounts don't have maybe the video team at their disposal, or maybe they're more self-sufficient. And so I'm curious overall if there are tools that have helped you edit or create that someone, you know, with a bit more of a low-tech team could still be successful in social. What are some things that you've seen or used to make better video?
I mean, I think it's almost in the palm of our hands. I mean, you can make valuable content with your iPhones these days, or any phone that you have. I think a lot of brands are starting to do that as well. It doesn't always have to be this high production. Like, I mean, kind of what we were talking about with the raw content. Like, I mean, obviously there's going to be cameras that are going to be a lot better, and a lot of equipment. It's always going to help, but you can make very good content with just your iPhone. The new iPhones are insane. So I think there's not really a reason not to be able to make content that can reach that next level anymore.
So buy a new iPhone. honestly, it could be one of the best investments you make, truly, is having a camera that is, you know, connected to your phone that's as top line as possible. And then, you know, even like Instagram's tools, built-in editing tools, or Snapchat's, both, I think, allow you to do certain things that make an engaging video for at least the social stuff. What about you guys?
Yeah, I think for us, one thing that we are trying to be better at, and one thing that our team is exploring, is captioning videos. You know, I see a lot of brands now who post these videos and they don't use subtitles or captions, and it's just not as accessible. So we're trying to be more accessible for our audience. It's tough when, you know, you're out doing live content, creating videos from your phone. Like, how do you caption those? And I've actually found a couple of different apps that you can download that'll, you know, caption videos for you, or can help you put those subtitles in within like minutes, and then you can download it and post it.
Are a couple like specific ones?
Yeah, one of them is AutoCap. Now, AutoCap, I'm an Android user, so, you know, I'm sorry about that. But AutoCap is one for me for any Android users out there. And then there are a couple on, if you just search in the App Store, you know, auto captions or captions for videos, there'll be a number of different apps that'll pop up that you can use. And a lot of them are free. Some of them are not. It just depends on whether or not you want to invest in it. But that would be my suggestion, is to download an app that'll caption videos for you, or make it easier at least.
Agreed. Yeah, actually, that's what we found makes an enormous difference in watch time and in accessibility, mm-hmm. is just sharing a very similar video, but captioning it. We started using a tool called Capwing.
I've heard of Capwing.
You heard of Capwing? It started as kind of like a meme generator app, but I would highly mm-hmm. recommend people play around with it. Really inexpensive tool. It's a desktop-based tool, but you can, any like subtitle, meme style captions, front and lower banners, anything you need to do that's very simple edits that you want someone to be able to do on the fly without needing to learn, you know, Premiere Pro or, you know, any of the tools, that's one that works really well.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm not, video editing is not my forte, but I've used Capwing before and it's super intuitive.
As a takeaway, I really want to make sure that our audience can walk away and have some best practices for where things are moving to, things to start playing around with. So What are your top takeaways for someone that's managing a social media account or in charge of marketing for their brand, and they're trying to create better content in 2020 mm-hmm. using video and with the resources they have, which might not be as much as a whole team effort? What should they at least keep in mind that's a main takeaway and things that they should know for the next year or so that it will probably work?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think it's just use all of your resources and figure out what works. Like we talked about, stories, feed, and just all the platforms. I think a lot of people, including me, I forget about like posting a video to LinkedIn or Twitter, but it can't hurt. It really can't. Mm-hmm. And finding that balance between quality and quantity. I mean, you don't want to force content down people's throat, but it is important to stay consistent with quality content and vary the length of each video that you're posting. But I think it's just really important to, yeah, like use everything, Facebook, Snapchat even. I mean, just keep posting and figure out what works and then just go with it.
Yeah, I think for me, and as you know, coming from more of a strategic background in OSC, you really just got to ask yourself, you know, a couple questions. Who is my audience and what do they care about? And then once you figure those two things out, you say, all right, how can I communicate with them in a way that they can, you know, they will relate to my content. They'll care about my content. They'll want to share my content. Those would be my big takeaways is really thinking about the strategy and who you're trying to target and asking those simple questions.
And do you ask, what do they care about in their personal general life, or, you know, if you're mm-hmm. a business brand that sells to other decision makers at companies, you know, mm-hmm. not necessarily a consumer audience, do you then recalculate that for what they care about related to their business? Is that how you would think about it?
Yeah, I think for us, let's take prospective students, for example. We got to ask, all right, what do prospective students or even current students, what do they care about? And for the current students, we're going to find that out pretty quickly by what performs well and what doesn't. What are they interacting with on our Instagram stories or our Snapchat stories, and what are they not? What are they not watching? So we'll find that out pretty quickly. But in terms of prospective students, all right, you think, what we got to ask, all right, what do they look for in a college? You know, so we got to do research on that. So we have a team of people in our office that are doing, you know, doing that type of research, asking prospective students, interacting with them, talking to them, trying to figure out what do they care about. So I would say it really comes down to doing your homework, doing your research.
And like he touched on a little bit, I think especially if you're working for a small brand or a small business and you're managing the social media, I think the sharing feature is very important. So mm-hmm. knowing who your audience is, and if you can get as many people as possible to share that content, that can be huge, especially on like a campus like University of Iowa. I mean, I think almost all platforms now have some sort of sharing feature. So if you can just somehow get your people to engage with your content and share it with all of their followers, that's huge as well.
Awesome. As the last thing, since we're about to drop off, is there an account you shared, one that you follow? Is there one that inspires you that you think the audience would learn a lot from too, as like they're at the top of their game also and creating content that people would admire? You know, who do you look at for inspiration in your space?
Well, honestly, I look to sports accounts for inspiration because there's so many creative people working in sports.
Great.
And specifically, I like the Milwaukee Bucks, their Twitter account and their Instagram as well. But one thing I feel like they do a really good job of is showcasing the personalities of their athletes. You know, you can walk, hop on their Twitter and you can see their, one of the things that they do is the players, they do these fake WWE kind of sketches like before games, like in the tunnel, and they're just messing around, having a good time, and you really get to see their personalities. And I don't know, that's what I really like about sports is you can get to know the players, you can get to know more about them and what they enjoy and what they love in their everyday lives. And I think the Milwaukee Bucks do a really good job with that.
Awesome.
Couldn't agree. I love the Bucks as well. But I do look at other sports accounts or even just the videographers behind those accounts. I follow a lot of them on Twitter mostly. But just to see how, like he kind of touched on it, a lot of the focus right now in sports specifically is to focus on the personality of the athletes instead of the actual team. I mean, they're there for the team, but like I feel like a lot of times we just see it as a team and we don't actually know how those certain players are or how everything is inside the organization, which I think people are starting to really do a good job about that. As far as a specific account, I follow this account up in Minneapolis called Elite Edge TV. They specialize in video board and motion graphics for like season intros and everything. So I would highly suggest checking them out because their content's always really good. So
it's interesting, if you just take that approach and were to apply it to another field, I find that that's usually one of the best unlocks for creating better content is Absolutely. To steal something that works. So highlighting the personality and the stories behind individuals instead of just talking more generically about a company or a product service or just talking about one product story versus the whole bit, that clearly is going to work really well. And I'll only give the one counterintuitive example or the one that people don't pay as much attention to because they like to ignore, which is in politics, whether it's progressive politics or whatever, however you lean, you actually pay attention to their social video programs and the specific paid social ads that they put out, they are best in class engineered to get you to buy in, motivate you, take action, and are really, really effective. Almost always you can get, you know, the best ideas for animation or close-ups or formats just from watching what they're testing in campaigns, because political campaigns are just big marketing campaigns essentially. Yeah. So I highly recommend you at least pay attention to that and then apply it to your business. But I love the sports ideas too. Cool. Well, that's the time that we have today. So thank you for joining another Let's Get Digital and for following along. I wish we could take live questions, but we'd be here for like 2 hours. And so what I would say is if you want to stick around, our next event is in March, the third Wednesday in March. We're going to be doing a collaboration with First Rounds on Us, which is a downtown Iowa City organization that brings people together to learn about arts and business. And the first drink is on us next month at the Mill. And so we're going to have speakers talking about building an audience through influencer marketing and how they've monetized their own audience. And then we have just an awesome lineup for the rest of the year. So I hope you stick around. And thanks again to Logan and Bruce for showing up.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Cool. See you next month.